This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We begin hour number three. It is VSiN by the Books. I'm Dave Ross here, downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. Mark Melissa is kind enough to join us today here on a Friday back in Connecticut. But Mark, you're so close to New York City. We could almost say that as well. Great conversation with Brian McFadden in the last segment. And really looking forward to Jonathan Davis here in hour number three to break down the puck. But man, on a Friday, when we get a big fight card, Mark, like we have in Newark, New Jersey this weekend, cannot wait to pick the brain of the one and only Lou Finocchiaro. Joins us now here in the Progressive Guest Line. Give him a follow at Gamblu on X, the host of the Bout Business Podcast. Lou, this is a big one. And we're going to go to Jersey for this one here for UFC 316. Two title bouts here with Merab Dzhulashvili and Sean O'Malley and Kayla Harrison and Juliana Pena. Bantamweight divisions for both the men and women. You and I have been around this sport a long time. Normally, rematches don't go differently from what we see the first time around. Could there be a change in what we see from Merab and Sean where it looked like, I don't want to say out of this league, but Merab, clearly the wrestling dominated that first matchup with the Sugar Show?
Well, guys, thanks so much for having me. And this is going to be a great fight, a great rematch that I would say the majority of mixed martial arts enthusiasts would say that O'Malley really isn't deserving of this immediate turnaround. The other thing we got to look at is that O'Malley recovered from a labrum before this fight, didn't fight after the first Merab fight. They made Merab go in there against Nurmagomedov. So I don't know what the Sarah Longo people have done to go sideways with the UFC, but it seems like the UFC sometimes throws some shade that way. So in this fight, to answer your question, I think there's two ways for O'Malley to change the narrative from the first fight, which, oh, by the way, was a 5-point Dzhulashvili. Two judges had 29 or had 48-47, and the other one had a 3-point. And O'Malley was hurt, didn't fight well, underestimated his opponent, and Merab was driven. Now, this fight, is Merab taking O'Malley any kind of lightly? Now, normally, because I think that there's a dynamic IQ difference between these two fighters, and besides youth, length, and reach, that's O'Malley's IQ. However, with Merab fighting O'Malley so close on the heels of Bilal, who's a friend of that East Coast Longo Serra Anik group, I think that Longo's in his face telling him, you're wrestling him up, don't get cute, don't. But Merab has the propensity to clown around. And if he does that in this fight, like he did in the last, I think he could be in trouble. I do believe we'll see a very, very different O'Malley. He's not going to underestimate the strength in wrestling this time. He's shut himself off, changed a number of personal approaches in his life. And I look for O'Malley to come out firing, and I think he has a chance to catch Merab. For those of us in states other than Nevada, O'Malley plus 5.5 minus 135, that's a farm bet. What's a farm bet? Bet the farm. I really like O'Malley in this fight. I don't think Merab finishes him, and I think that if you live in Nevada and you don't have the opportunity for the points, which is a safer play, then you might take O'Malley via the KO or an inside. KO is plus 450. Mm-hmm. Any inside the distance, plus 425. So that may be the other way to go. And let's also mention, New Jersey Boxing Commission, the Fight Commission, is not the most efficient fight commission. They can go against unbelievable odds and call the wrong decision, even if it's a guy in Jersey. So be forewarned, this is Jersey.
Lou, I want to ask you about Pena and Harrison. Could Juliana, she's nearly a 5-1 underdog in her match on the women's side of things. Could you see her shocking the world again?
She did it against Nunez. And yes, I could see her shocking the world again. But I'm almost going to describe this fight the way I described the last one, Mark. Pena is tough. She's mean. She's being overlooked. She's PO'd. And if any day there was an important day to watch weigh-ins, it's today, because Harrison competed at 55, 60, 65 pounds. It's murder for her to get to 35. Once she gets the title, if she wins this fight and gets a shot at Nunes, we'll never see her at 35 again. She'll either retire or they'll start 45, because she can't continue to do this. If she has any inkling of a tough cut, it's all about Pena. And I've already taken Pena here, because even if Kayla makes the weight okay, I think we have a very, very motivated fighter in Juliana Pena.
I was on Pena that first time around when she did shock the world the first time against Amanda Nunes. Now, Lou, when I look at it this time around, the weight cut is huge, as you mentioned, for Kayla. With that in mind, the total sitting at four and a half. It's juiced heavily to the under, by the way, at minus $1.95, which normally you don't see a lot in women's MMA. Normally it's going to be juiced to the overs, whether 2.5 or 4.5. So you get plus money here if you think this fight is going to go the distance in all five. You remember that first fight with Juliana and Amanda? She almost knocked out Amanda too fast. I think the total that day was 1.5. It did get to the over, but barely, when Juliana finally finished Nunes that day. Do you look to this and say it's going to be a finish one way or the other, that it's going to be Pena, if it's a bad weight cut for Harrison, can get her out of there inside of 4.5 rounds, and or Kayla with that wrestling gets Pena down to the ground and Juliana cannot control her on the ground?
Absolutely not. I wrote up on the digital the over. And if you want to get another 15, 20 cents of value, take it to go to decision plus 165 or 170. Pena is not going to get finished here. Kayla doesn't finish unless it's 42-year-old Holly Holm. And the longer this fight goes, I think the weight cut's going to affect Kayla. And Pena knows that. She has IQ. It's part of her game. Every way I look at this, I look at it like O'Malley and Davishvili, and I love the points here with the points with Pena at 5.5. Now you're at 215.
Ooh.
So those of you outside Nevada, I would look hard at those because I believe both those fights go to decision. And if a flash of lightning does occur, it would be in the main event.
Lou, how about Patchy Mix? Great at MMA, making his UFC debut, going up against Mario Bautista, sitting there as a $1.80 favorite. What about Patchy Mix? What do you think you see from him in Newark?
Patchy Mix is from Buffalo, so he's fighting in Newark. His peeps are going to be there. He'll have the crowd. He's a new entry into the UFC, and he's flapping his gums like Kevin Holland, for crying out loud.
Oh, I think we lost Lou there for a second. Hopefully we get Lou back. But it's a great point about Patchy Mix, right? And the Kevin Holland comparison is perfect here, Mark, because Patchy's been talking a big game. And by the way, those numbers for Patchy Mix said, Mario Bautista is so bad at Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Not only am I going to submit Mario Bautista, I'm going to submit all of his coaches too. Like he's talking a big game for making his UFC debut. So I want to back Patchy there, but that number comes so far down, it's like 3-1 now for a submission for Patchy Mix. Then I think if you're Mario Bautista, you've got to be pretty offended. I'm not sure if we have Lou back yet for this conversation, but that, like, to me, I lean towards Patchy here, Mark, but I think he's too big a favorite. And there are levels to this, and like, you're not just going to walk through a Mario Bautista in your UFC debut, I don't believe. So again, if you want to get in the Patchy Mix side to get the submission price at 3-1, not going to be mad at you. But I kind of look at it and I go, man, Mario's hearing that too. His coaches are hearing that too. And you keep running your guns, eventually that's going to happen. Lou, what is your takeaway of that, with Patchy saying, not only will I submit Bautista, I'll submit all of his coaches too?
Yeah, he's trying to create interest in his fight. He's new into the UFC. I don't like the talk, but I understand it. Bautista's biting down on his mouthpiece already. He's quiet. He's an assassin. He's got the experience. He comes in 7 straight UFC wins. He doesn't have the mouth, but he has the fight game. And I like Bautista here in a fight that opened pick'em that went all the way to Mix. Now, if this is a close decision, Dave, and it's in Jersey and Mix is from Buffalo, it could be tough for Bautista to win. But I don't think Bautista is going to leave it to the judges.
Yeah, that's going to be the key, right? Don't leave that in the hands of the judges, especially if it might be a comfortable one for Patchy there. You mentioned Big Mouth, Kevin Holland back in there, says he wants to fight six times this calendar year. Lou, I think he just doesn't like to train. He just wants to fight. Vicente Luque says he's got a pathway back to a championship. I don't know if I see that. What do you make of Big Mouth as a big favorite against Vicente?
Yeah, I believe in the Big Mouth here. Yeah, he's a professional fighter, and he just takes fights. And for Luque, if you acquiesce Luque and stand there and want to rock him, sock him, robot, you give him every chance to win a fight. But Luque's now 35, 36. He's slowed down. He's taken a bunch of damage. And the last thing you want to put in there against Luque to make him look good is an adroit, fast, athletic guy. That's what Holland is. I think Holland paints his fence.
All right, let's get to the brass tacks here, Lou. For people that check you out in the Bout Business podcast and the sneak peep that you give out, is there any fight, whether it's prelims or otherwise, that you gave out early and the numbers have aligned to where you want it to be? What's maybe your favorite play that we haven't addressed yet?
Yeah, down in the undercard, you got a heavyweight fight, Waldo Acosta. Cortez Acosta, excuse me, against Sergey Spivak. Spivak can't strike or absorb strikes very well, but he knows he has to get to the second or third round. And if this fight does get to the second or third round, I believe Spivak has great advantage. Spivak via sub, 3-1.
You've got the polar bear subbing out Salsa Boy in the heavyweight division. Lou, appreciate you as always. Can't wait for this card. Give him a follow on X at GamBlue. We'll catch up again next week. We got a lot more to get to, including news or noise that is next here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
Fantastic conversation in the last segment with Lou Finocchiaro. Going to have Jonathan Davis join Mark and I here in the next segment. And Mark, we were talking about it, you know, like, well, I don't know why I'm so into and have been into the UFC for better part of two decades. Like, I guess my brain, I just look at it and I go, man, these men and women, first of all, cutting weight is insane to me, Mark. Like, I talk to fighters all the time and I'll be like, what's your walking around weight? They'll be like, Ricardo Lamas in Chicago, one of the best featherweights we ever had in the UFC. Ricardo used to tell me, Mark, he would walk around at 185 pounds and then he'd get down to 145 in a week. Like, how do you do that to your body? It's insane what these men and women can do. But you were mentioning you went to baseball camp at West Point. What was that like?
Yeah, so Robin Roberts used to have a baseball camp up at West Point. So I was a pretty good baseball player. Because you're a Marine, I was giving you credit. I was like mentally tough to go out there and be a Marine. And so, you know, you'd stay in the barracks. It was like a 2-week camp. And, you know, they ran a pretty tight camp, right? And so for meals, you'd have to go run like 3/4 of a mile to a mile to like the mess hall like every morning. And I'd be like, and I'd tell the instructor, I go, what does this have to do with hitting a baseball? I go, I'm like, why do I have to go run? Why do I have to go do this? I can run 90 feet. I don't know if I can run 3/4 of a mile. I go, this has nothing to do with hitting a baseball. And the guy was like, run. You want to have your eggs? You got to run.
Do as I say, whatever I say.
Exactly. This is not for me.
I loved fighting in the Marine Corps in my Paris Island days, but Mark, I was not good at it. I was the house mouse as the smallest recruit. And what they would do is at Paris Island, they'd put you up against the two biggest recruits from the other platoon with pugil sticks. Yeah. And they give you a football helmet. Let's just say it did not end well for me. The one-on-two thing did not end well for me, but it was all mental, right? It's all mental.
But Dave, I give you, like, I'm not kissing your rear end, but you were a Marine. Like, you have to be mentally and physically tough. I understand house mouse, you're going up against guys that are bigger, faster, stronger, and whatever it might be, and you might get your rear end kicked. But to still then stand there and go through that, like, the utmost respect. It's just ridiculous to have the mental fortitude to be able to withstand all that. It's crazy.
As a Italian American, I don't know if I was related to Arturo Gatti, God rest his soul, but I could take a beating like Arturo Gatti used to take against Mickey Ward in those great fights back in the day. Yeah. Let's get to it, Mark. I got to ask you a very simple question. Is this news or noise?
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
Now, Mark, I'll tell you this. In our group text here daily with Jensen and our producers, Brandon and Danny, this kind of got our attention as to a futures market here when we heard the news that Shane Steichen has said that Anthony Richardson is going to miss minicamp with a shoulder injury. So, boy, do you know this in your neck of the woods. That could pave the way for first-team reps for one Danny Dimes, Daniel Jones. Is this news or noise?
I would say it's more news than anything else, because the other thing with Richardson, Dave, is that he's not been the epitome of health. Like, he's a physical marvel. He's not consistent or accurate throwing the football. He's also, when you look at the amount of hits that he takes, his body doesn't hold up, right? Limited starter at Florida, not a lot of college experience. You lean, and he's a ridiculous talent. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no doubting the athletic ability of Anthony Richardson and what he could do with the football in his hands, running or throwing. There's no question. Yeah, I think that's where, if you're Daniel Jones and you're his agent, you put him in the best possible position. There was already questions coming into the year, you know, by McAfee and others that were familiar with the Colts organization about the commitment from Anthony Richardson, right, in Indianapolis, to then go along with, at times, some of the decision making on the field. Then you throw in him not being available. And if you're Daniel Jones, you land with a brilliant offensive mind in Steichen. You know, I think he's a pretty good head coach. I think he's a better offensive mind. He's got the physical tools and ability. I think it was more a case of, like, we talk about fighters. I think he was a little bit punch drunk with the Giants. I think the hits that he took behind a bad offensive line led him to being really indecisive with the football in his hands in terms of his decision making, and that got slower, which wasn't, we didn't have great pocket presence to begin with. So I think it's kind of newsworthy, Dave. I really do. I mean, I think if you're Daniel Jones, you're looking to try and rebuild your career and take advantage of an opportunity. You're getting paid. I think he signed a 1-year, $12 million contract with the Indianapolis Colts. So, like, now you're saying to yourself, okay, well, I don't think Richardson's going to hold up. He's hurt already. I'm going to get an opportunity. Now, what do I do with that opportunity with what I believe is a really good offensive mind in my head coach and Shane Steichen at some point this season?
You know, I'm right there with you. That total is sitting at 7.5. I almost feel like the books don't know what to do with this team. And certainly we always talk about quarterback and coach before you get to the futures market window there. Juiced evenly, minus $1.10 either way, and that's 7.5. This is an 8-win team a year ago. Oh, so close to winning the division 2 years ago. We remember that game against Houston. To lose the division in the last game of the regular season. And this is normally an angle I like to play, Mark. Like, I played big on the Vikings last year with Sam Darnold, and it was more a trust factor with Kevin O'Connell that he could resurrect the career of one Sam Darnold. We've seen Baker Mayfield, right, when he went briefly to the Rams. People might forget that before he went to Tampa Bay. Maybe Sean McVay helped kickstart his career. Do you think Daniel Jones can get that from Shane Steichen? And if so, I'm not saying Anthony Richardson is going to lose his job and get Wally Pipped here, but there is the opportunity, if he does kind of have that resurgence, if it's his overplay, Daniel Jones, if he stays healthy, could be the quarterback for the foreseeable future for the Colts.
Right. I think it's a question of, I think you got to look at the schedule. I mean, they're going to get off to a soft start when you look at Miami, because, Dave, I think the Dolphins are going to be terrible this year. And I don't think they're going to win many battles up front when you're looking at the offensive and defensive line. I think both quarterbacks are a little bit different. Like, you bring up the Darnold comparison in Minnesota. Like, Darnold's decision-making, there was never doubting his physical talent. Right. It was really his decision-making, holding on to the football, turning the football over. For Jones, it's more a case of, I would say, a little bit of the decision-making, but also, can he physically go out there and hold up, right? So he's had a torn ACL. He's had two neck injuries with the New York Giants as well, and he's gotten rattled around. Can he still go out there and beat you with his legs at times? For sure. Does he throw, like, the most accurate deep ball? Probably not. But I do think it could. I think Daniel Jones needed a freshening. Like we talk about this in horse racing at times. Sometimes you need a little bit of a change of scenery, right? You put the horse out on the pasture, talented horse. Then he comes back bigger, faster, stronger. And then you take him to the track or take her to the track once again. I think Daniel Jones need out in New York, just like the Giants need to rid themselves of Daniel Jones. And now he lands in Indianapolis with the Colts. I think with Jones, it's never been a case of whether or not he can physically play the position. I think it's whether or not he lands in a position where he's going to be protected up front, and he's got a head coach that truly and fully believes in him. And I think that situation might present itself in Indianapolis.
You mentioned the ponies. They're going to be racing tomorrow at Saratoga for the Belmont Stakes. Great conversation we had with Thomas Gable in hour number one as well. Eight horse race that we're going to have here for the Belmont. And obviously we've got some big names in it. When you're looking at sovereignty and you're looking at journalism, that's for sure. Mark, what's your breakdown that we might see tomorrow at the Belmont?
I'm curious to see what kind of pace you're going to get. Rodriguez is going to go to the front. I think he's a little fleeter of foot with Crudo, and I think it's a mile and a quarter race. Usually the Belmont, when it's at Belmont Park, it's a mile and a half race. But Rodriguez, who won the Wood Memorial at Aqueduct, is going to go to the front. I think it's a really interesting field of eight, Dave, because you've got a rematch of the Derby and the Preakness winner with Sovereignty and Journalism, and then Baeza, I think is a fascinating young three-year-old that's really, really talented and ran in the Derby, ran in the slop, ran really well and took the 5 weeks off. And I think for John Sheriffs, who's had success on the Triple Crown Trail, I think he's one that's kind of the more intriguing one of the top three. I had Sovereignty in the Derby. I think everybody and their mother had Journalism. Didn't think the race would play out the way that it did in the Preakness. I understand why Journalism's getting the run. I'm curious about the wear and tear, three races in 5 weeks. The thing that would knock Sovereignty would be, is he going to get the pace to run at up front to help his closing move? That's why I think a horse that might be a little bit more forwardly placed, Baeza, who right now in early betting is the second choice at 3-1. I think Baeza is an intriguing horse when you're looking at the Belmont tomorrow up at Saratoga.
Were you surprised that Sovereignty didn't race at the Preakness to have the opportunity to go for a Triple Crown?
No, because I think they're looking at races like the Travers and they're looking at the Breeders' Cup, and he's owned by Godolphin. And I think their goal was to win the Derby. Mm. Like Godolphin, his ownership group has won races all around the world, right? It's a premier ownership group that wins races in the States, over in Dubai, over in Europe. It's one of the great racing outfits. They didn't want to exhaust the horse because horses in today's day and age, thoroughbreds in today's day and age, Dave, don't run like they used to. So they wanted to take care of the horse. They want to win races later on this summer, and they want to point toward the Breeders' Cup in the fall.
Fantastic breakdown there, Mark. Also, fantastic breakdowns coming from Mike Somich. He nailed the super trifecta in the Kentucky Derby. He and Patrick Maher, they're going to break down the field. Do not miss it. VSiN at the Track, that's today, streaming live at 2:10 p.m. Eastern on the VSiN YouTube channel.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We continue the Friday edition of VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross and Mark Melusis is here with you on this Friday. Jensen Lewis, of course, is on assignment down there in Chapel Hill, getting ready for those Super Regionals to begin today. We always love catching up with the Iceman, I like to call him. Jonathan Davis does a great job here on the network. You can follow JD on X, as we do, at West Coast Hockey. That's HKY to complete that number there. Joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. And JD, before we get to the puck, you mentioned in the NBA Finals, are Canadians watching the NBA Finals maybe not as in tune as they are with Edmonton and the Stanley Cup Finals, but there's a reason to be optimistic about Canadian basketball, right?
There sure is. We've got four Canadians on the rosters here, two for each team. You've got SGA, you've got
Lou Dort,
Nembhard, you've got Mathurin, and you've got Lou Dort. So yeah, I mean, four prominent Canadians out there, and I'm not sure, but there's definitely more reason to watch this year than in years past. And two guys from Toronto, two guys from Montreal.
Dude, does Canada, how does the rooting interest go there? Like, are you going for SGA because he's the most well-known of the bunch, or is it split right down the middle?
Yeah. To be honest with you, like, I don't know. I just, you know, I think that there's just a lot more Canadian pride out there, especially with, you know, those guys all being, you know, being a part of Canada's national team.
Yeah, it does seem like we talk about it all the time, JD, in our conversations about all of Canada's obviously rooting for Toronto. It always feels like first. And then Edmonton, I'm sure that they're immersed in that one. Mark and I were talking about the changes, what we could possibly see in game two tonight here in the Stanley Cup final. But let's go back to game one and get your thoughts on it. Because when you're down 3-1, if you're Edmonton and you got Sergei Bobrovsky, and you would think that's a big advantage over Stuart Skinner between the pipes, Skinner really upped his game when it got down 3-1. Is that something, is that like maybe not being mentioned enough because we're looking at Draisaitl with the bookend goals to win it, but really it was Stuart Skinner in that second period when Florida was coming. And I felt like he really held the line there, JD.
He did. That's a great point there, Dave. And yeah, I don't think it doesn't get talked about enough. The other thing that doesn't get talked about enough, you know, are the fact that last year in the Cup final, Stuart Skinner actually had a better save percentage than Sergei Bobrovsky. Though Bobrovsky won that one, you know, one more game. The other thing that happened in game one was it was the first time in Paul Maurice's tenure in Florida that they had blown a game where they had led after one and led after two. They were 29-0, I believe it was, leading after two periods in the playoffs under Paul Maurice over the last three seasons. It's a different Edmonton team than it, you know, than it's been in years past. I never felt that even down 3-1 that they were out of it. And then when you get to the third period, guys, what Edmonton has done, the team that has always been criticized for not being able to play defense, you go back to their last four Stanley Cup playoff games in the third period. Their last three games against Dallas, they gave up four shots in the third period. In game number one against Florida, they gave up just two shots on goal in the third period as they got themselves tied and forced overtime.
Jonathan, okay, with that, and I thought the Ekholm goal and Ekholm getting back in the lineup for Edmonton was a big-time key when you're looking at game one as well. I think he logged 25 minutes in the overtime session with the overtime for the Edmonton Oilers. But what do you take? What's real? What's not real for what you take from game one going into game two later on tonight back up in Edmonton?
I think that everything that we saw from both teams was very real. I mean, you know, the difference for Edmonton, you talk about Ekholm's 25 minutes. He played about 20 minutes at even strength, and that was pretty much across the board. The Oilers trust all their guys back there. They haven't done that in years past. For Florida, you know, this is the toughest matchup that they've had to deal with, you know, of all four rounds of the Stanley Cup playoffs. They also haven't had to deal with someone like Evander Kane, you know, a guy that's kind of a bit of a unicorn, especially when he is healthy in today's game. But I think, look, overall, no, it's very evenly matched, and the 4-3 overtime score reflects it. It's just that Edmonton is better at playing defense than they were a year ago. Florida's better at offense than they were a year ago. And it's really a matter of now who can be better overall, you know, for the seven-game series. I liked Edmonton going into it. It hasn't changed my mind of what I saw in game number one. And look, at the end of the day, what do they say? It's not a series until you lose one at home. So I guess, you know, you're not in trouble until you lose one at home. You know, now we're seeing that in the NBA. We'll see what happens tonight in Edmonton.
You know, it's interesting. Again, you go back to Draisaitl getting that, you know, a rapid goal there in game one to kind of get this thing started, kickstarted. Three goals in that first period. And it does eventually get there with the over at six and a half in game one once it went to overtime. Tonight it is sitting at 6.5. Mark and I were talking about this earlier, JD. Could you get a little bit of a tighter game than what we saw with the beginning in that open ice in game one? Like, how do we judge that? Or is it, man, these offenses are just really good, and I don't care how good the goaltending is, you've got to lead offenses either way, and certainly from the Edmonton side.
Yeah, I think seven of the last eight meetings between these two teams have gone over the total. So, you know, 6.5, I think what I'll probably do tonight with the total is I'll wait in game and try to grab a six. Hopefully we get off to a slow start. But I, you know, if you wanted to lay, I mean, I put it this way, I can't go under this one. And one other point back to Draisaitl, guys, he had zero goals in the Cup final last year against Florida. For him not to get just get one, but to get two is pretty remarkable.
John, I want to ask you in terms of, you know, confidence level, because going into the matchup, if you're looking at a side tonight, do you expect this series going back to Florida where it's evened up at a game apiece? Do you think Edmonton can jump out 2-0, given the fact that, you know, the Oilers rallied, Florida was really good with leads going into the third period. They were 10-0 this postseason. Now, all of a sudden, the Oilers find a way to win game one. All the pressure of an entire country. They haven't won a cup since 93. What does this do for the Oilers now going into game two tonight?
You know, a year ago, I would have said it was a big deal for more so for Edmonton. Like, I think it was more important for Edmonton to win game one than it was for Florida. But these two teams, they're like Brad Marchand said it best, like, you know, back in the Toronto series, when they went to game seven against Toronto, there's not really pressure. I mean, pressure is game seven of the Stanley Cup final, not game seven of a series. Game two of the Stanley Cup final, no big deal. Look, both these teams have been in a series where they've trailed 2-0. So I don't think that, you know, if Florida was to lose tonight, it's not a big deal for them. They're just not fazed by these things. I think that for Edmonton, you know, the difference is that they've treated this playoff and the playoff and the way they approach the final more of a business-like manner. So I'm not going to be surprised if we were tied at one, but I don't like I said, I'm looking at a longer series. I just don't think it really will faze either of these teams. And, you know, as they say in the playoffs, especially, momentum doesn't go from game to game. It goes from shift to shift within a game. So I don't take a lot. I don't think, you know, Florida's down and they're all going, oh my God, we have to win tonight. I think it's, you know, from a side standpoint, I would look more to in-game. I'll continue to play both teams at -1.5 goals. The trend that, I mean, it got stopped in game one of the series, but it's still 11 of the last 12 playoff games and 20 of the last 23 have been decided by two or more. So I'll tack the game that way from a side perspective.
You know, Jonathan, I have not gotten involved in the Conn Smythe here in the finals and looking at how we try to get inside the heads of the voters. And, you know, Mark actually votes for the Heisman Trophy. So it's like great having Mark in the program to talk about these sort of things. But I look at the nuance of the Eastern Conference final in the NBA. And I think everybody thought it was going to be Tyrese Halliburton. And yet the voters gave it to Pascal Siakam. Could there be nuance to this? Connor McDavid's odds on at $1.50 to win the Conn Smythe. And Mark even brought up the point, yes, he won it last year, even though they didn't win the cup. Is Dreisaitl, is that playable for you at +450 with those bookend goals here? Or would you look, again, for the Florida side, that it's got to be Bobber if Florida wins a series at +$4?
Well, okay, so I've got Dreisaitl at 15-1. Woo! That I did that before round
nice.
Three. I mean, I thought it was crazy that it was so high. Still at 450. I mean, look, if he he's now tied with Connor, or he's what, 1 point back of Connor, I think, in the scoring race. He's still live at +450. It's still, hey, you're still going to make 4.5 times on your money. So I would be on it. For me, on the Florida side, look, I've got a Sam Bennett ticket at 39-1. I think he's still at 20-1, yep, which is unbelievable for the guy who leads the playoffs in goals. I think Sam Bennett is still the play on the Florida side right now.
Yeah, instead of going the Bobber route, especially if it's a high-scoring series, right, and Bennett keeps that goal scoring and Florida wins, 20-1 feels like a ticket you might want in pocket. Very quickly, JD, is it going to be 0-2 for Florida tonight after they're north of the border here going back to Sunrise?
The Canadians part of me says I really hope so. But, you know, look, the fan in me just wants to be entertained. We've been pretty fortunate how we were entertained in game one. We were super, you know, followed up in the NBA final last night. I'm just hoping for another exciting game. But my heart is leading with Edmonton. I just hope it works for my pocketbook as well.
Well, we'll sign up for 7 more game ones. That's for sure. That's how great that was. JD, appreciate you as always, my friend. Everybody check him out, VSiN.com. Great write-ups as always. Best bets are next.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross and Mark Melusis is here on this Friday edition. Great conversation with Jonathan Davis in the last segment, and I want to expand on that a little bit here, Mark, and it does get us into our best bets of the day presented by GBank, the official bank of VEASAN. So when we looked at game two tonight in the Stanley Cup Finals, and I did think it was interesting that even for JD, he believes that that Sam Bennett ticket at 20-1 could still be live if you believe that the Panthers can come back and win this Stanley Cup Final. Remember, they're plus $1.80 now in the series price. They're $1.10 underdog tonight. That total sitting at 6.5. And Mark, what I think that pathway looks like, right, is if this is going to be a high scoring series with evidence of game one, and I think Jonathan Davis laid it out there perfectly, that the trend is to the over for these two teams, that's for sure. If we get the so-called shootout, that might take Bobrovsky out of it, right? Even though he's the short shot now at 4-1 to win the Conn Smythe. Do you like going deeper down the board? And Bennett had two goals in game one, a 20-1 ticket. If you like Florida to win and Bennett keeps this pace up, that's not a bad ticket to have in your pocket.
No, it's not a bad one. And he basically, you know, said when we were bringing up the fact of getting Drysdale at 4.5-1, right, at 9-2, he's like, well, I got him at 15. So I'm like, all right, well, good for you. That's great. That's fantastic. So, I get it. Listen, Bennett's had a great, and I think Jonathan did a great job of kind of looking at both teams of how they look different this year as compared to a year ago. Edmonton better defensively, Florida better offensively. You know, I'm kind of a little bit more of an old school guy where I think the goalies in the end at some point in time will matter. But I could understand if you're going to go down the ticket and say, all right, if I believe that the Conn Smythe winner will come from the winning team, then Sam Bennett at 20-1 and you like Florida to rally in this series now down one game to none, that you think they're the better hockey team, that they eventually win the Stanley Cup for a second year in a row. Yeah, I've got no issue with you going with Sam Bennett at 20-1. The tricky aspect of, because of history and the precedent was already set, is leaning too heavily into that, knowing that there is the distinct possibility of Connor McDavid still being given the Conn Smythe.
Yep.
Even if Edmonton should lose this series.
Yeah,
that is real. That is possible.
Yeah. And again, I mean, this happened last year. I'm sure he would not, again, he wouldn't want it, but it doesn't mean he wouldn't get it from the voters. Yes, right. Even though he might be humbled and be like, oh my goodness, we lost again. You're right. The voters could still see it the other way. And that's the intriguing part about some of those subjective markets that are out there. Very quickly, let's look ahead to game two in the NBA Finals. Still a wild one we saw last night. I think people are waking up this morning, Mark, certainly out here in the West Coast going, I can't believe that still happened. 111-110 is the final. It does stay under the total of 230. And again, OKC closed at what, 10-point favorites in that one. And not only do they not cover, even though they were up 15, they lose the game outright here. Now that series price has been cut in half, just about to about 350 here on the OKC side. Remember, they're about a $7 betting favorite coming in to the NBA Finals. Game two Sunday night, it's up to 11. Now, the total has come down to 227.5, and that's maybe where I'm looking, Mark. I did end up getting to the under last night, and as I mentioned to the guys in the group text, I said, hey, as long as there's no OT, I felt good about this one about midway through the second quarter. I felt like it was home there, and we almost had OT. So it was, you know, almost like, oh, no, just don't do that. I kind of look to the over. It's up to 228, so it's gone up a half point since our program today. That it still got to 221 with as bad a first half as Indiana can play. And Oklahoma City easily could have taken advantage of those turnovers, and they didn't, to the tune of only 9 points over those 19 turnovers that Indiana had. That gets me to better shooting in game two. I think my stronger play here might be the side, might be the total rather than the side, and play that over 228.
Yeah, I like the over in the game as well. I think we're going to get points. And I would take, even though it's a large number, I would still take Oklahoma City. Ooh. And I'm not telling you that I don't believe that Indiana, it's not my favorite play. I'll give you another play that I kind of really like a little bit more. But Oklahoma City is going to respond, right? They had an extended break going into game one. They didn't look good, efficient offensively. They obviously, all the steals, all the turnovers they were able to generate didn't exactly accrue to points up on the scoreboard, which was impactful in the end. And I think they had defensive breakdowns in the second half. Indiana, and we've seen this, that, you know, and the Oklahoma City Thunder are by far a better team than the New York Knicks, right? So we saw Indiana have this epic comeback in game one. Then they responded, win game two. I'd be surprised. Like, I'd be stunned if Indiana was able to win game two in Oklahoma City Sunday night. But my favorite play is I'm going to take the Thunder minus the 3.5 in the opening quarter. It's a minus $1.38 right now. Like, I think Oklahoma City is going to, and they're going to get it beat into them like a drum. Not realistically, not in reality, but their head coach is basically going to hammer it home. Listen, we let this one get away. It was a learning experience. We're going to learn from it. We're going to get better. We're going to go to game two. We already know Oklahoma City is by far a better team at home than they are on the road. You know, SGA had himself a game. The secondary, Williams and Chet Holmgren, didn't necessarily play all that well. I think they're going to and I get Indiana can adjust to the playing style of Oklahoma City. I think the Thunder are going to get off to a rip roaring start on Sunday night. Want to send a distinct message early on in that game. I'll take the Thunder laying the 3.5 in the opening 12.
Total is the side rather is going up higher as the total has gone up a half point. So as the side, it's up to 11.5 now. I think we might hit some 12s here before we get to Sunday at this rate. Everybody waiting for that zigzag on OKC. Great conversation with Lou Finocchiaro here earlier this hour, breaking down UFC 316. Had Reed Kuhn on yesterday. His numbers are spectacular as well. Mark, I'm going to tell you right now, and Scott Seidenberg is going to be coming in up here next in for Gil today in a numbers game. And I was talking with Scott during the break. I do think there's, unlike conventional wisdom, there is multiple pathways for Sean O'Malley to win this fight and to reclaim the belt. And look, I was all over Merab the first time they fought, and it was, I felt like I was stealing money in that one. You knew he was going to outgrapple Sean O'Malley in that one. Sean, a very different approach to this one. It's not just that he's not dyeing his hair and he's giving up marijuana and all these things, these personal sacrifices of this changed guy, Mark, that he's been talking about, some other things that I won't mention on the show. But let's just say he feels like a different guy out there. I do think he could win on points if this goes all five. And by the way, it is juiced heavily to the over 4.5. So it wouldn't get me off the side of Sean O'Malley. Because remember this, you can go back to the Peter Yan fight. In a fight, I also had Sean O'Malley, and he was over a $2 betting underdog that day. I still don't know how he got that decision, but the point is, he gets some of those benefits of the doubt because he's the sugar show. He is a draw. And if Merab doesn't do damage on the ground here against Sean O'Malley, I could see a pathway that Sean O'Malley could win that on points. So I would actually look to the Sean side here, plus 230. I like that. The Juliana Pena side here in the other title fight, she's up to 525. Look, if you like Kayla Harrison, play her inside the distance, because I do think, like Lou does, the longer that fight goes, the more it favors the Venezuelan vixen here. I'm going to be on the side of Pena here at plus 525. And if she gets stopped in the first 5 minutes, I'll tip my cap to Kayla Harrison. There are levels to this game. Juliana has been in there with the very best in the world. I'm going to be looking to the dog side here in both bantamweight titles in the men's and women's tomorrow night in Newark. Very quickly, the Belmont. Tell the people your breakdown on the Belmont tomorrow in Saratoga.
Listen, I'm a huge sovereignty fan. I just am. And pace makes race. I just don't know if he's going to get the pace up front. I'm going to let the odds board lead the way a little bit right now. I don't think he should be the third betting choice. Early betting has Journalism at 6-5, Baeza at 3-1, and Sovereignty at 7-2. That odds board obviously can change. We're a long way away from that race when it gets going, right around 7 o'clock on the East Coast time on Saturday. I'm concerned about the pace in the race for Sovereignty. If I don't play Sovereignty, and if he's sitting there at 4-1, that's going to be my play. I would look at Baeza. I think Baeza is a really talented three-year-old, improving for John Sheriff. So I think he's going to be forwardly placed. Rodriguez is going to lead it. If Baeza's a third choice, I'm going to go between Baeza and Sovereignty in terms of my top pick, and that's going to be my exact. I'm going to box it a $1, $2 exact to box Baeza and Sovereignty, finishing 1-2 in the Belmont on Saturday up at Saratoga.
Love the handicap. Can't wait for that race as well. We got a $500 trifecta right now from GBank First Bet and VEASAN. All you got to do is open up a GBank Visa signature credit card. First 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 of first bet to trigger that $500 trifecta. You're going to receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa signature credit card. First bet's going to give you up to a $100 deposit match. Then VEASAN's going to complete the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription through October 31st. That's a $200 value. That is the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. Head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. It is a one-time promotion limited to customers opening up a new account in response to this very offer. Will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions do apply. Mark, really appreciate you, man. It's been great having you on the last couple Fridays, and I'm sure we will do it again soon. A numbers game. Scott Seidenberg, he's got you next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.